Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, I'm going to push the odds because they say it's going to rain in about an hour. And so I looked at the radar, and there are a lot of clouds north of here going north. And so I think we're safe. But I've had to run away from two storms in the last couple months here. But tonight's topic is the infinite one. Tonight's topic is a heavy concept that I have mentioned several times on different shows, but I think it's time we just go for it. And it has to do with the notion. And what's interesting is this is sort of a paradoxical thing to say, and some of you might blow over it unless you slow down your thinking for just a second and realize, I don't think this is something you should blow over. This is not filler. You know, I don't really believe in filler. If I have any shows that feel like filler, it's because I've recorded a bad show, but I never intended to do so. And we have raindrops of some kind on me, so I'm going to put a blanket on the computer here. So I'm getting little sprinkles on me, but all the gear is actually outfitted to weather that. We'll see. I jumped out of a show about a week ago, and then I went out front and it stopped raining just as fast as it started, so we'll let this one go just a little bit longer before I totally hang it up. But we wonder where our souls come from. We wonder what the logic is to this universe. And in my opinion, it has to do with the paradox of counting everything. How many souls are there? Where do souls come from? Are souls limited? Are souls infinite? What's our purpose here? And you start thinking about the counting the soul thing, and it starts to get really upside down in your brain. But there's one little thought that solves all the problems, and it is that we are one. We are the infinite one. I got no rainstorm clouds overhead. Nothing, but I'm getting fucking sprinkled on, so I have to set up here some other way. It's pretty hilarious, man. I just stopped doing it. I got everything covered in sheets except for this mic. Even the camera's got a big blanket on top of it. Don't tell me I don't love you. This notion hit me probably 20 years ago, the notion that we are one. It didn't come from any outside source, but I'm sure people have been thinking about it for years. Perhaps they knew it a long time ago, and we just lost the knowledge. But I wrote a song, probably 1995-ish, 96. And the song is called How Could I Hate You? And the idea was, at that time, to me, if we lived forever, then how on earth could I hate you? You know, not that I hated anybody in this world, but I just was trying to kind of put a message out there for anybody who easily hates on things. Because if you live forever, what's the point? You know, and Prince in the Under the Cherry Moon had a really interesting line. One of his things about the whole deal was, if we live forever, then life is a parade. Which is why the album that had Under the Cherry Moon's title track on it was called Parade. It was very interesting. But now think about it. We live in linear time as our body understands this illusion of time. And I think what's great is that when I mention time in an episode, for all of you chronic listeners, you know that I disclaim it as an illusion of the passage of time. And, you know, Douglas Adams, lunchtime, doubly so, that whole thing. But it's because we have memory of previous states of our existence that we believe that there's time. And within our own paradigm, there is time. There really is. It's an illusion, but we use it, right? I was a kid once, now I'm an adult. I'm going to be an old man one day, and one day I'll perish, you know? But the idea that we are all the same person at different levels of maturity, different levels of accomplishment, it's huge. It solves for the recent paradox that I've had a problem with, which is where do our souls come from? How many do we have? Does God create them? There would seem to be a limited amount, no matter how you did it, whether God created everything or an alien created everything. There'd be a limited amount. I believe, obviously, that we have a soul on a different plane of unregisterable by machine existence. We feel souls all day long. You know, again, when I say to you, okay, buy the best 8K television you can, hook up the best pipe you can on the internet, get yourself a 100 gig line, wire it directly to your computer, and have a Skype session with a loved one. It's crystal clear. Wear a Bose headset to make it even more crystal clear. And you can have a pretty good conversation like that. You can have some pretty good experiences like that. But you get in the same room with that same human being and you don't have to say a word and it feels better. It feels amazing. It really feels amazing to be with other human beings. And we've lost that word, amazing. It's extremely important. There's an old saying, and I was taught this as a young man. People who hate themselves can't love anyone else. And people who are mean to everyone hate themselves. So I'm always telling you that if you join a political party that's all about the divide and division and hatred and feeling alienated and blah, 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 they are keeping you inside of some, and you know, I would say satanic bubble. Right? I don't believe in that stuff, but it is just a nice way of wrapping it up and going, that's a bad state of mind. You don't want that state of mind. When you choose to hate somebody for any reason, dislike them, even for a split second, you're in traffic, you're in public, you're on the phone with a telemarketer who's trying to steal money from you, or, you know, not even telemarketers, sorry, the scammers from India, the scammers from all these other locations. India seems to have the drop on American scamming. They have figured it out. Well, what if that's you on the other side? Do you want to accept that? What if we are Ted Bundy, the son of Sam, Charles Manson, Adolf Hitler? We're all these people. We are the people that prospered from a war, and we're the people that suffered and became perhaps extinct because of a war. We don't really have the mind to think about that. We don't want to think about that. And so we don't. And we keep our sort of blissful paradise that we have, which is we don't know what we are and we simply exist. And there's really nothing wrong with that as well. But if you are angsting over this particular thought of what we are, you know, what are we, where are we, who are we, all that good stuff. And it doesn't matter if you think we're in a matrix. It doesn't matter. Still could be true, because for me, the matrix solves very little. It explains a little, but it doesn't solve much. Because at some point, if you're in a matrix, we're inside some Tron Legacy, you know, grid. Doesn't matter. I just finished watching an episode where it's Star Trek's Next Generation, Season 6. It's where the nemesis of Sherlock Holmes, Moriarty, who existed in a episode, I believe in 89, where he became self-aware because Data said, please give me an opponent that is comparable to my intelligence. And so the AI within the computer created Moriarty and beefed him up. And they gave him a sentient quality. And so then 4 years later, they stumble onto his program and he pulls some shenanigans so he can leave the holodeck. But at the end of the episode, they left it with a Matrix joke at the end. And I'll just let you watch it. It's brilliant. It's like literally one of the best episodes. It has Mr. Barkley in it, who's just a gem, man. Mr. Barkley. And any of his episodes are very special episodes. And it's really wild, this actor. He plays a super-duper insecure person on the Enterprise. In real life, he's obviously very confident, accomplished actor. But what if we, this is the way I want to frame this whole episode in your brain, so that while I'm talking, you're thinking as much as possible about your take on this. And again, if you're in some paradigm of religion, then your mind potentially is locked down and you can't think about these subjects. You're not allowed to think about these subjects because the church has told you every single thing that is to be, and you are relegated to men to get your salvation to God. You must engage in the rules, the man-made rules, right? It's unfortunate, I mean, that you would have a shackle on your mind that you would adopt and keep. Your morals are a different thing. That's what you're made out of. That's your guiding principles. And that's what churches are infinitely good for, because they're not being taught anywhere else, like I said many times. But now let's say that God comes down and visits you. Doesn't say much. God's going to be like a guy that doesn't really probably get into a heck of a lot of small talk. So if he's going to share something with you, he's probably going to get down to business real quick. And this is sort of a paradoxical example, because potentially, if you believe in this, then maybe God is us. And we're not allowed to say that in modern religion, are we? But let's say he does. He's this other being. Maybe he's the guy that never comes in. He's always the guy on the outside. He's us on the outside constantly. But he comes in and tells you, you are one. That's all he says, and then he leaves. And then you're stuck with this imperative truth that you don't quite understand. And a good teacher would never give you absolutely everything without giving you some sort of chance to have an example. Like if you learn how to, well, put it this way, you go to class, then you're learning how to oil paint. Your teacher's a great oil painter. But you're going to learn to become a great oil painter. That's why you're there. But your teacher just says, watch. And your teacher paints a photoreal painting, however long it takes. In fact, they're quick because they have all the tricks and they don't make any mistakes. And potentially, they painted this painting they're going to paint for you for every class they've ever taught. So now they just do it by memory. Okay. Now you go home. You've seen the lesson of how to be a great teacher. But you never painted. And that's us never thinking, but being given all the answers. There's a point in everyone's life where you are in grade school and you've learned to do basic arithmetic. And then you get the chance to go to college and you hear this thing in college. You can use calculators in college. Because the college is like, look, we don't have a million years for you to do long form division. And so just use your calculator. They never teach you how to do a sine cosine equation until you get way up inside advanced math. And then you don't want to wait for it anyway, because it even takes a calculator a long time. Well, it used to, excuse me. It used to take a calculator a long time. You'd hit cosine and go, boom, and it'd give you the number. Well, in this particular episode, we're doing long division. What if you are every being in the universe? And I mean every single being in the universe. If it can register as a life force, you will rotate through that being and be that being. You will know what it's like to be a rock, a plant, an insect, a fish, a human being, and potentially an infinite number of other beings that we haven't discovered yet. It's an extremely interesting notion to go through. Because if you process it well, the first stage I think you'll go through is one of, well, geez, I better be nice to every human being on planet Earth, because that being is me. You'll see an insect and you'll be like exact church in India that does it, but there's the ones where they sweep in front of their feet because they're not supposed to step on a bug. When on a microscopic level, the sweeping itself is probably tearing the bodies apart of all kinds of microscopic things, but the intention is there, right? Okay. After a while of brewing on this concept, if you're like me, you will then read the news, look out the world, and you'll see people who are off course. And it's a really weird thing. Because people are off course in all kinds of different levels. You might have someone who's homeless who simply needs some help, and they're willing to work to get the help. Some people have been homeless for so long, they're talking to themselves, you know, holding two different conversations with multiple personalities. They don't have the the faculties and the wherewithal to get back on their feet because they're malnutritioned, mentally ill, but it's probably a temporary situation that could be resolved as long as they were to get nutrition, get a safe place to stay. But they're going to be tired, and you're going to have to work with their body to give them energy. And depending on how old they are, man, when you fall down at 5 years old, getting back up is nothing. You don't weigh much, you have low center of gravity, and a ton of energy. If you fall down at 70, and you don't break your hip, it's hard to get up. You're tired. Your maximum apex of energy is not going to be what it was in previous years. And so we look at people who have fallen and we have to relatively patch in what they are, regardless if we believe that they are us. But you do have radicals that are out of control. They are very self-brainwashed. They have come up with doctrines that don't make any sense. They've got all their addiction dopamine patterns in their brain attached to things that are horrific. We know a lot of them, right? Spirit cookers and Satanists and politicians and corporate, you know, CEOs and all that kind of stuff. All kinds of bad people out there. What are you going to do for them? And then you have the notion of, well, if you're going to devote any time in your life to help another human being, then you're going to be losing the opportunities that would be afforded to you if you didn't have to do that. And some people are like that. Some people are so empathetic, they can't go to sleep if someone's suffering that they could help in their mind. What I find is that we kind of go through stages in helping other people because we do it and we get some satisfaction that we gave away some of our own benefits in life that we work really hard for, that we inherited or what have you. And then, you know, you can't do it all day long. You've got to go back to your own life. Regardless if you're completely wealthy and you don't need to work anymore, you just can't save the world. You know, this whole Westworld thing has also added a huge piece of the equation because now I'm watching script writing in a completely different manner. I just watched John Carter again tonight. I hadn't seen it since it first came out. Apparently that movie cost $500 million to make, regardless of what you hear. And it was a big box office bomb, but it's a pretty damn good movie. And you find out that the main character lost his wife. Very gladiator-like. There's a bunch of movies like this, but he wasn't where he was supposed to be in enough time to save his wife, and she was murdered while he was gone. It's not a big part of the movie, but they almost deus ex machina push it into the end of the script to give him a reason to fight this battle because he has another opportunity to save another woman that he's in love with, and so he flashes back to the death of his wife, and he slaughters all these dudes. It's Disney, so it's not too hardcore. But what was the cornerstone or keystone of the hosts in Westworld? He gave them, Ford and Arnold, gave them a tragedy in their life, a fictional tragedy that didn't happen. Gave them a keystone, and they worked off that. It's sort of why they do what they do. You know, Batman is the best example in the DC universe. His parents were murdered in an alleyway. I told a story a really long time ago that when I got into role-playing, especially in the Champions role-playing system, I had some buddies I was playing with. I was being the GM for the first time, so I was running all the story, and it was a futuristic world. And I ended up one night, solved one of the keystones for one of the guys. I erased it, and he quit automatically. He was kind of being a dick, but it was probably time for us to switch games or whatever, but instead of saying that, he was like, well, I'm done. I'm like, well, what do you say? Well, it was like his girlfriend died or something in the past, and I resurrected her in a particular way. It was kind of a Matrix-y way is the way I did it. But he says, well, I got my girlfriend back, so I don't care. I'm not going to be a superhero anymore. I'm going to go off and get married and do all this other stuff. And I'm like, really? You lost all your morals? You lost the idea that there is suffering in the world and you've got superpowers to handle it? And so anyway, but he made a good point. He was teaching me a lesson for storytelling. You never, ever solve the problem of Batman's parents dying. You never bring them back. They don't get resurrected unless he ceases to become Batman potentially. But a one soul, the infinite one. Infinity is this paradox that feels to me as if it is something that is to... Let me give you an analogy how my brain thinks about infinity. If I try to conceive of the infinite number set, infinitely divisible, infinitely exponential, so it can go up or it can go down. You can get the infinite small thing, the infinite big thing. What my brain does is sort of a rubber band effect. I go out and conceive of these numbers as far as I can go in a split second, and then my brain comes back fast because it's like, man, I can't do this. I have no technical mechanism to conceive of that. Okay, same thing goes for all things that are attached to infinity. How many souls do we have? How many people have lived on Earth? I mean, that's not an infinite thing, but geez, the number is really high, isn't it? Now think about that. If you have a similar experience, let's just put it that way, and I don't know that you do. I don't know that any human being can conceive of infinity, so I don't know what you guys do when you bottom out with that conception. But if you're like me and you have this rubber band effect where your brain starts to basically reject the algorithm, it's sort of like all those sci-fi movies where a robot gets a circular logic loop and starts to self-destruct. We have the ability to abort the thought. We reprogram ourselves very quickly to get out of that whole thing. Now, if we believe that the universe is hinted with the evidence of how it works. And, you know, what's funny about what I'm saying here is that you have Bibles that are full of all kinds of symbolism. You have architecture with all kinds of symbolism. We worry about all the symbolism and all that stuff. But the more genius that an individual gets or a group of individuals, they signal. They predictive program. They're trying to sort of look at each other and go, well, we're smarter than all these people that don't know what we're doing. And so based on that, we're going to need to communicate with each other because otherwise we're bored to death. So they're going to do all this symbolism. It's a huge wink, wink, nudge, nudge to each other. All the Super Bowl halftimes where they have these crazy Masonic rituals. It doesn't always happen. You know, Prince did it. He was okay. Rolling Stones did it. I think they came away clean. But anytime they have these teeny bopper pop stars, then we have symbolism like crazy. Someone is winking to someone. Because these pop stars don't have the IQ to come up with all this stuff. They don't. Someone is orchestrating this for them. Get out there and put the suit on, put the devil outfit on, put this lion thing on, whatever it is. The reason why I mention that is that what if the universe is hinted with all of its answers? And humanity, through an open mind mechanism instead of an indoctrinated mechanism, is capable of opening the mind, letting in these infinite concepts, but instead of processing them as infinity, we process them as a singularity, as a one. How do you handle like number sets? Well, we simply say that in order to distinguish infinity, everyone can get their own number. What number was that being? It's like the tape in Beetlejuice at the very end, you know, when he's sitting in the waiting room waiting for his meeting, and he steals the really low number from the head shrinker, and the head shrinker does dust on his head and he shrinks down. Everyone gets a number. But maybe numbers are simply meant to be conceived of as numbers. It's a set. It's an object. If I bought you a bunch of Legos that had all the distinctive pieces that, was it Copenhagen is where that company is, all the pieces that they've ever conceived of are in this box. And there's a limited amount, of course. But in there are your pieces. You need some more, I'll get you some more. Whatever you're trying to build, we'll keep going back to the store and getting you more until you're done. So much of the universe is infinite. They say there's infinite colors. Man will never conceive of that, and it doesn't actually go up that high. There's a bunch of arguments as to whether man can really distinguish beyond a certain threshold. Are we at a few tens of millions of colors, or can we really conceive of a few billion colors? I do not have that answer. But you have this answer from God. You have this truth from God. You are one. You are the infinite one. And what if the last thing he said was, "You are me, and I am you"? See you when you get back to the dugout after this play. How does that change you? You know, if you just use it in the sense of you have your self-awareness, this equation would first be applied, hopefully, to you. How do you look at yourself in the mirror? Well, we're talking about a plural, an infinite plural. Okay, so I'm not sure there's a heck of a lot we can accomplish with conceiving of this, except to say this. If you believe that you have to go and do something, go get your boon of knowledge to know something, a journey, you have to leave your house, you have to go to another place in the world or in the universe eventually to get the information you're looking for, that's an interesting way to live your life, right? It's the Indiana Jones way to live your life. Nothing wrong with that. But now what if, like I said a long time ago, I've been repeating it a lot for you guys, you actually, because you've been everything, you know everything. Your only problem is you don't think you know everything. Believe me, we know people think they know everything, but I think you feel me what I'm saying. And I was giving an example to a friend of mine, and I said, you know, take that big rig right there. I said, what if you wanted to learn how to drive a big rig? And so in your mind, you've got to go off to school to drive the big rig. Now, I'm not going to say you use this analogy personally, but if you have been every single truck driver, every single mechanical engineer, you are those people that invented that entire thing. You actually know where every bolt is on that particular model. I've been repeating and repeating this analogy to you guys. And this is sort of a bedrock platform / paradigm to really make this make sense in my mind, which is the following. You have to build a query to the universe to get the answer back. I cut a lot of pauses in the show. And usually the pauses aren't, I'm letting a lot more of them fly through, so there's a little bit of sensibility of how my mind thinks and how fast it thinks and that sort of thing. But sometimes I will be going after, because I'm, you know, in my brain I'm projecting 5 or 10 minutes out what I'm going to talk about. And I'll see something, I'll be, oh, mention that, right? But it's coming at me slowly because I'm eating up all the topics I want to cover before I get to the one that's going to be the next consecutive thing I'm going to say. And I'll have a person's name on the tip of my tongue. I mean, it's right there. I've got the name. I know what movie they were in or whatever example I'm trying to give. But by the time it gets to me, I know exactly what I want to say. That person, oh, where's the name? Where's the name of the movie? Where's the name of the actor? I'm missing one piece of information. And one of the pauses that I do is I'll stop and I'll go, what the hell is that person's name from that movie, the girl? And I'll start building a query out loud with my voice, just whispering it just like that. And then I'll sit and listen, just like Indiana Jones' dad said in Indiana Jones 3, Sean Connery. So I put the query out and I listen. And every single time it comes to me. I mean, sometimes I get impatient, I grab my phone and I'll look it up. Very rarely. I don't have to do that. I just choose to do that. And I think you have the same capability. You're asking the universe for that answer back. Now, I won't lie, I also believe that there are individuals that are in spirit form that are right there, and they're maybe reading a book or a newspaper or whatever they're doing, carving something, and they're just like, oh, it's so-and-so. Oh, yeah, thanks. Boom, start talking. But my mind is extremely open to that process. I believe that that process works. I use it all the time. So whether it is a biological trick from my brain in a Kurzweil model, or if I am truly doing what I think I'm doing, which is going out my pineal gland, out to the universe, and simply waiting for the SQL statement to come back, it works. And, you know, I had that epiphany and just started trying to do it. I don't even know where it started. I think it started during the show, to be honest with you. If I'd done it before, it was just a serendipitous thing. What's that thing again? You know, if we do that together when we're together, right? Oh, what the hell's that guy's name? Oh, yeah. And some people, you have those friends that know everyone's name, so they just go, bam. You know, it's like they memorize everything they've ever heard. But now, I do this show. I do tons of episodes. Most of the comments are extremely friendly. But, you know, every once in a while I get an episode where someone is incapable of processing the data. They're incapable of even watching the episode all the way through, and they're sort of, you know, shouting inside their comments or telling me that I'm wrong or what have you, and they run off. I want you guys to know, while I'm on the subject of that, before I finish up this point, I do get a fairly routine heartbeat of listeners, and you guys are watching, who come to me on the outside, and you're concerned that I don't believe in Christianity as a factual story. And, you know that I believe in the message, and I believe it's divine, and although Luke 14:26, well, that's a little doozy. Go look that one up. But you come to me and you're being so kind and so polite, and you're saying, well, I know that you don't believe this is true, but now you have lived your whole life indoctrinated in that from birth, and so you have a very tough step ahead of you if you're going to change your belief systems, because like I said in many of my episodes, I think it's Why We Believe, which is like episode 4, I think, an episode I'm extremely proud of. Go see it on the new season 1 channel. Link in the description. But when you're indoctrinated for life, it's really tough. But you have found beauty, and you have found serenity, and you have found solutions in that text. You need to know that I know that text as well. So I find the same divine writing to help me through my life. And believe me, I'm pretty darn familiar with Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and all of the various, you know, factions that those books were written for, and how Christ was giving example of after example of how he spent his time, who he helped, who he said to help, how he said to behave. But if I get to go back to my point originally, I just want you to know you're out there, and you're not the only one that does that, and I respect you greatly. And let's just celebrate in the truth that's in that book, which is mostly metaphorical and in the realm of God, which is love, right? To help another is to love another, and that's where we are. But I'll get someone who's telling me that I'm wrong. Sometimes they're very friendly about it. Sometimes they're not friendly about it. Well, now, if I truly, truly want to adopt this belief system and live by it, which I have not done yet, I'm still contemplating it. I'm still examining it. So I want to make this episode early on so that you can hear my mind in its infantile stage of this thought process. I have to stop and go, wow, that's me on the other side. I've had a different life. I grew up, I'm a different age, different location, different relatives, different religious doctrine or anti-doctrine. And that's me on the other side. And I'm heartbroken that some guy is telling me that we didn't land on the moon. And I really want to believe that we landed on the moon. It's special to me. And that's why as I get older, I tend not to try and convert people. But now let's just do an example of where we might trigger to negate this entire paradigm and go back into the human paradigm of all these restrictions and closed-mindedness, which I fall victim to all the time. And someone just says the right sort of combination of F you in a post, and then I kind of come back a little sarcastic towards them. I try not to ever do that. And I catch myself. Let's just say there's something in the world where something occurred, and physics completely negates it. Can't happen that way. You dropped a shot put, and it stayed in midair. It's like the Nutramatic Cup in the second book of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The big statue of Arthur throwing a Nutramatic Cup, and the cup is just floating in midair. It's this gigantic styrofoam cup, you can assume in your mind, right? And they asked in the book, well, how does it stay there? And the birds, which are the new race on that planet, because they got tired of living on the ground, so they spawned wings and became bird-like, they said it's there because it is artistically correct. It is art. And it floats there because it's supposed to. And this would be the equivalent of like taking the, Athens, like one of those, or take the pyramids, and they're just floating in midair. And it's like, well, what keeps the pyramids floating in midair? Well, because it's artistically correct. Oh, okay. I mean, that's why I love Douglas Adams. He gets you to think differently about everything. I'm not sure that Douglas Adams has ever finished a page of text without throwing one of these at you. Which is why I think The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the original BBC broadcast, is one of the finest pieces of critical thinking fiction that's ever been written. And if you think about how brilliant this guy was in 1978 and how awake he was in 78, it boggles the mind. He didn't have the internet. He had college and some people around him, but he's writing this extremely young as well. Some people are like that. In my past, you know, I was creative in a very traditional way. I don't know if I was creative in a, like, storytelling. I'm pretty creative and I can do some twists and turns. Today I'm pretty lethal at it, but when I was a kid, his age, early 20s, mid 20s, I was clever, right? I wrote some really tight code, drew some really good artwork, made some pretty clever music, blah, 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 but it wasn't off the chart or anything. If we're to contemplate these heavier subjects, this is sort of what we have to do. Unplug everything. How many times have you, here's an analogy for your mind. You've got an entertainment center in your house, some place where you keep all your electronics. You got your computer desk. You got a printer and a scanning thing and your, all this legacy crap. You got a million cords because you've had four phones over 10 years and you have a charger still plugged into a bunch of outlets, but you're not even using them anymore. What do you do to clean that up? You save all your work on your computer and you shut it down. You unplug everything. You may even take everything out of the room. You vacuum for the first time in 20 years. You dust. And then you slowly bring everything back into the room. Maybe you rearrange your desk, like I said, previous episode here. You do it simply because it gives you a signal of refreshment. The Hawthorne effect. Feels good. Just mix it up a little bit. Part of me, by the way, believes that we create these residual patterns of vibration. So let's say you put a desk in a particular area in your house and you put your chair there. It could be for your sofa, it could be for your bed as well. And you're always sitting in that location in your room and you're vibrating a particular way. You've had a stressful previous year. You've had maybe some arguments with your loved ones. You've just stressed a little bit, but now you're okay. You're all right. Well, it is a good idea to move things around because you're going to get out of that vibrational pocket. It's just like the movie The Shining or the book The Shining, where he said, it's just like when someone burns toast. You can smell it after it happened, but there's no toast, there's no burned toast in the kitchen, but you can still smell it. And that's sort of how the frequencies work there. So definitely use that to free up your world a little bit. Rotate. Literally rotate objects in your house. Your feng shui, right? And I know I'm saying that funny, okay? You know, when we stare at the bodies in space, like the moon. The moon was out the other day, and boy, that thing looked like it was just hovering a few thousand feet over this, over the ground. It was so clear. The waned side of the moon that was in the shadow was so beautifully backlit from the sun. It was phenomenal. And I pointed out, you know, I was going out to dinner with a friend of mine. I pointed up, I said, that's why people think that thing's only 3,200 miles up in the sky. Because look how utterly clear it is with the naked eye. But they want you to believe it's 237,000 miles away on average. You're looking at this thing going, man, it looks really close. If it was a seeing eye chart, you'd get all the letters right on it, you know? I want to make sure that we are parsing this world from as many perspectives as possible so that we can find the ones that are true. We dream, right? We dream, and we dream in different worlds sometimes, don't we? Buildings and cities and places we've never been before. But we have the ability to project that world in its infinite complexity within our mind. Like I said, it took us from the mid-70s to probably, I don't know, maybe Tron 1982, where you get your first sort of kind of photoreal-looking objects, and then you get into the, what was it, Last Starfighter was all CG. It looked really much better. And then you got into Abyss. I forgot Abyss was done in 89, just prior to Terminator 2. It had this CG water, but really it was Terminator 2 that borrowed from the Abyss, because it's all Cameron, where you really had super photoreal stuff. And then you had Jurassic Park, where you had organic dinosaurs looking as real as real. Unbelievable techniques they had figured out to make this film. When I think of Jurassic Park, I think about the velociraptors in the kitchen. That's where I went to a presentation in San Francisco, narrated by Steve, I think his name's Steve Williams. He's one of the guys that worked on that film at ILM. And you start to see how reality was just going to be usurped. But our brain has an ILM in it. Our brain has an ILM that's probably 100 years in the future, in terms of utter perfection. We see things, and they have all the right shadows, all the right colors, everything. And you will have some nebulous, more abstract dreams from time to time, but the ones that are good are ones that feel like this world a little bit. So we have these moments of proof that we are way bigger than this bag of chemicals. Again, they can damage the body and mess with your memories and give you some memories back. You know, they can push on your brain when your skull's open and you'll remember being 5 years old and like it was yesterday sort of thing. But they can't tell you where your memories are in your brain. Oh, there's books that say they think it where it's at, but they're talking about an infinitely small clump of cells that there's not enough cells or binary packets of energy in that little clump in your brain to account for everything you can remember. Especially not this little ILM factory that makes dreams. I about a week ago, I released the Previous Lives episode. And that sort of dovetails into this infinite one. But even that has sort of a linear principle to it. You can't be anything that's alive today because you're alive today. Your soul is this singularity thing that can only move forward in time, if time exists, which would have to exist to have this linear principle imposed on us. But this infinite one theory is that time doesn't really exist. That's why I can be you and you can be me. If you subscribe to this channel, then there's some connection that we have. I talk the way you think. Perhaps I'm your older uncle, or I'm your clever nephew. So I might say some things you didn't think about, but in the end, we're sort of vibrating in the same frequency. And there's other people that will come, and they see it in black and white, and man, they're gone. They have had it recommended to them, and so they watch it for a little while, they see me with long hair, whatever, and they don't like the way I talk. You know, I get these comments every once in a while, very sparse, but they happen. And for me, it just makes me laugh. It makes me just, people just like, I just sling some judge the book by its cover statement, you know, and I'm pretty impervious to that stuff because I never let it bother me in my lifetime. I guess, you know, my whole thought is as long as I'm not getting lynched because we've lost all of our freedoms, say what you want. Just, you know, go about your world, go about mine. I'm not imposing myself on you for sure. I would never do that. If I thought, give you one of these examples that kind of dovetails in a loose way to this theory, but if, imagine that we had some sort of, what is it, the second episode, season one of Black Mirror, where that guy was stuck in a world where he's peddling a bike his whole life, and you pedal for credits, and then you spend the credits to have a moment of peace in your room, to go and become something else in life, you buy a ticket to a talent show, or whatever it is. Imagine if Deep Thoughts was suddenly forced into every household, and every household had to watch Deep Thoughts. It's a ludicrous example, but the idea is if I was ever notified, okay, kid, you know, your show's going to be everywhere and people are going to have to watch your show. Keep up the good work. Oh, my Lord. The pressure of that would just be too much. I would change. I would not be myself because I would feel the empathetic pain that everyone would feel having to watch this kind of content. That's why I like the fact that it's an electoral thing. You don't like the show, you don't subscribe. You never watch it again. You dig it, you subscribe, you come back. Now you got to come back because they'll unsubscribe you. By the way, I should probably stop just for 1 second. This is a horrible place to say this, but you guys are being unsubscribed from the show. There's a rumor that YouTube's going to get rid of the bell, so you won't get notifications, which I think is ludicrous because the operating systems have OD'd on notifications. Man, you can't visit a website today where it goes, do you mind if you send your computer a bunch of spam? And you're just like, block, block, block. Every place I go, I got to block everything. So just know if you're passionate about the show, you're going to have to visit the channel in a bookmark fashion because you will be unsubscribed at some point. I want you guys to start thinking about this, what it would mean if we were one. Think about it in the fashion that someone would tell you as a child that this is simply the way it is, that we know this as an empirical fact, and then try to regress yourself back to the infantile mind that we had when we were young, where anything's possible, because no one's told you it's impossible yet. How would that change everything? Now, obviously, we live in a world where that is not what people believe, and therefore we have wars, and therefore we have hatred. We have, you know, insane areas of the planet where women are castrated and killed, and, you know, murder is just not even a big deal. You know, some cultures are just built to be rude. It's just the way they're built. There is a weird thing that sort of is the anti-belief system in the Infinite One, which is the following, in my opinion. We have the us and them mentality. We have the haves and have-nots mentality, and it's very difficult. I absolutely find it impossible not to fall into those two categories in conversation once certain subjects come up. You do have this need for self-preservation. But I thought of it several times of like, we have immigration in this planet that's out of control. We have countries that are trying to take over the entire world with their population. And it's sort of this boil the frog strategy that because the rest of the world is pretty nice, we're allowing these people to move in and buy up all the property and then multiply like bunnies. And eventually, a bunch of races will cease to exist until it's down to one. And they're very, you know, some of these races are very anti-mixing. They don't date anyone outside their race. But then they'll, the second that you deny them anything, which we don't, but I mean, if we were to deny them because of their race, this unequal distribution of resources and this, hey, you're taking up too much space in the world. You're only one race and we got a bunch of other races and we all deserve to have, you know, some equal space. And I know there's been violations all over the place, Native Americans in America. You know, you have your genocides in Africa, you have your Armenian, you know, thing, your Jewish Holocaust, and all these different things. So we've done these horrible things. But once we hopefully reach a point where we wake up, you know, there's going to have to be some sort of conversation about that, right? We're not having it now, so it's sort of organically occurring. Europe knows all about it, trust me. But if you think about the way that the ruling class and the royalty of the world think, it's the us and them. We're the smart people. We're the ones that control the world. We're built of genetics that are just, the second our babies are born, they're smarter than everyone else's babies. It's not true. I just recently heard a pretty horrific story about one of the sons of one of the most wealthy families in the world just becoming a complete drug addict, and just, wow, you wouldn't think that that would happen. But when you hear the story, you're like, well, I guess that's the case. But I thought they had controllers that made sure that their offspring didn't do these things. But it's not the truth at all. This kid had infinite money, did tons of drugs, and was spreading it all over his friends and whatever, friends in quotes. People were there to get their drugs from him for free. But they incubate this and they build policies based on us and them. Again, I just said it in a previous episode. Tony Rockefeller talking to Aaron Rizzo saying, you know, what do you, little baby possum just ran by, you know, what do you care about them? Save your own family. Screw them. If they're too stupid to save themselves, then screw them. And that's what's kind of going on right now. We're being so nice and we're so docile to all the control mechanisms around us, and especially in America, where we are nothing more than the entertained. We're a huge nation of the entertained. And so we're looking the other way constantly while people come and take the country away, trying to destroy our laws, trying to destroy our world. But I've had this thought, and it's probably because I write scripts, and maybe it's something I'll eventually put into a script, but let's say it got all the way down to two races on Earth. And one, you know, they're going to battle it out. They just know they have to. That's like a dominant species thing. And the race that's potentially the smaller one is the more intelligent one. They have the more creative force in them. They're the engineers that have invented most of the things around the world. And the one that has simply multiplied the most, that's all they've done. And all they do is copy everyone else's stuff. So they don't have any inventors yet, because there's no mother of invention to invent. And it gets down to the last guy in that smaller race. And in the end, that guy he's going to be mortally wounded. Maybe he's shot, maybe he's stabbed, whatever it is. Maybe he's poisoned, but he's got a few seconds left of conscious thought before he has to dial out. But let's just say he or she is a very wise person and looks up at the person who's standing over them as they die. And their last thought is, well, at least you're a human. Go ahead. Take over the world. Obviously, we were too nice to wipe you guys off the face of the planet before it got this bad, or build a better world. So we lost. But at least humanity's going to live. And, you know, maybe the last words are like, go explore the stars. You know, go figure out what this place is. Because now you're going to start warring with each other. And it'll be people with good teeth versus people with good eyes versus people who have better hair, people who are taller, people who are thinner versus people who are fatter. They're going to start warring among themselves because they have that primitive mentality of needing to war in the first place. I firmly believe that if we could get behind this one theory, this infinite one theory, that we are all one, then it would simply be that you would improve yourself and the world that you live in, because you're improving everyone at that point. And most fantastic humans that have ever lived have had that mentality. They tried to better the world, and they did. Now, obviously, it's a fight against time. It takes a lot to configure your life to be able to help other people, at least in a macro sense. You know, you can help everyone in your neighborhood or in your town, but if you're going to make a technology that You know, gets rid of world hunger, gets rid of disease. People that suffer from things like insomnia or what have you, and you've got this solution and you pass it out to the world and it makes the world a better place. It's very tough to configure your life to be at the right place at the right time with the right invention, to get investors or sell enough that you can reinvest in yourself and expand your business to make this kind of thing happen, to write the best poem that touches everyone's heart, no matter if it's translated into 100 different languages, it works in every language. It's very tough to do that. But now think about this. I once wanted to create a video game, and we almost did it. We bought all the domains to do it. But I wanted to make a game where the entire world worked to build something basically an MMO. So imagine you have what I was going to do is build like a pyramid. Let's just say a pyramid or a city. But a pyramid's cool because a pyramid, what we do is we say, look, this pyramid is going to need 1 billion people to participate one time to build this pyramid. There's bricks in there. Now, someone could sit up all night and put in thousands and thousands of bricks. And eventually it gets done. And the pyramid, if you were to say, let's divide up the world a little bit, every single country has its flag on the brick. And so a country with 1 billion people comes in and participates like crazy into this thing, and that pyramid has tons of that country on there. But in the end, we will have built a game where the whole world participated. Maybe a country that is underestimated puts a tremendous effort into this thing, and they get on the map of the world radar for the very first time. Some tiny country in the world, pick a country, some of these unknown countries in Africa that I don't even know exist, some country in sort of the Eurasian states, the Uzbekistans and Kazakhstans, you know, the places you don't use an average conversation in the first world countries, unless you're talking about oil, or you're watching Sasha Baron Cohen, one of his movies. But just creating something where we all get to work together and see ourselves as one, it still promotes individuality of each nation state. In fact, it gives you an opportunity to be prideful about your participation. Now, it would be also amazing if, in order to get a brick, you had to do something that forced thought, perhaps critical thought. Wouldn't that be amazing? Maybe certain bricks are much easier to get. The foundational bricks are easy to get. But the pyramidion stone on the top that's made of gold or diamonds or whatever it's made out of, to encrust it with diamonds is something extra special. You know what I'm saying? I believe in my heart of hearts that if we were to all tomorrow wake up in some amazing epiphany, some amazing supernatural thing occurs, and we're all on the same page, and suddenly, and this is a bit of an exception to my analogy here, let's just say the non-elite of the world / ruling class of the world have this moment, and all of a sudden we didn't want to fight any wars anymore. The police have perfect integrity. Teachers have perfect integrity. News agencies have perfect integrity, et cetera, down the line. That if there was one person that was missed from that equation, we would have a fatal flaw in the system. Because that one person, let's just put it some Rothschild or Pasteur or Windsor person, notices that everyone else woke up. They still had control over some money, some power. They know they can't do anything radical because they've lost the race for the time being. But I think that they would try their damnedest to indoctrinate everyone away from that amazing miracle. Because the one thing that they have built up in their sociopathic paranoia is this superiority belief and this control mechanism. And they believe they have to have that. They would consider the whole world of peaceful, wonderful people now, with this miracle, to be the enemy. And they would see themselves just like Iago and Othello, even though the most evil character in the entire script, according to Iago, he was doing exactly what he should have done. It's a lot to think about, isn't it? Such a simple thought. The subject of infinity has to be conquered, I think, in my lifetime, in terms of the way that we conceive of it, describe it, and especially apply it to equations of how we behave on a spiritual level and in a physical level. Now, let me throw this closing example at you because it's been in countless scripts, books. The predictive programming in many works of art, 1984, Brave New World, you know, Rollerball, all these movies with these kind of bizarre dystopian worlds that people live in, or fascist worlds that people live in, they have threatened over and over and over countless times that they are going to eventually, once again, archive history and erase it. And then they're going to simply say, like the Obsolete Man episode in Twilight Zone, we have deemed what you are saying to be obsolete or terrorist information against the state, hostile beliefs against the state. And the human spirit is built exactly the opposite of that. So I believe that they will continually fail. They will continually fight this war. And if they simply, in my belief system, I don't think that they acknowledge that that is the true cornerstone of how the human form is built. You know, it's like Charlie Chaplin said in his great dictator speech, as long as men die, freedom will prevail, or liberty will prevail. And he's right. The trick of that algorithm is to say, we have to make sure the youth of the world learn these theories early at these really existential levels. Don't be bashful about teaching a young kid something advanced. You will find out that they can absorb it way faster and way deeper than you do as an adult. So if you learn something at 35 and you share it with a 5-year-old, again, probably one that hasn't been raised on a cell phone, an iPad, or a gaming console, or TV, that kid will absorb that in seconds and apply it to the rest of their lives. And that's why the globalists are always attacking our kids, changing our schools. They're trying to pass all this stuff in schools right now to screw up all the kids. Super bad science, super bad medicine, all pretending to be Robin Hoods at the same time. If you are involved in anything creative in this world, my advice is try to touch children with, I got to be careful the way I say it because Biden's out there, try to impact a child with your education to open their minds and stay free. And you might even say, look, these old guys in the world, they believe this old way. And this old way is that you're not to be free, meaning what you want to do with your life. When I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? They don't want you to be that thing when you grow up. They want you to be what they want you to be when you grow up. And it probably won't be anything that you'd ever want to be involved in. You're going to be in North Korea. You're going to be in old USSR, Russia. You're going to be in China, old China, you know, where they just tell you what you do and that's it. So stay free of that. Spread it to your friends. Make it a trend. Because as soon as we can separate these old bastards from us and they get to die off, you know, cutting off their adrenal chrome supplies would be a great way to keep them refreshing as quickly as possible. But let them perish and we take over the foundation of the pyramid. And basically, maybe we think there's more young people than there are older people, so it does create a pyramid at the top, right? Just food for thought. Be very interested in your thought process. This is a deep, deep episode. And this is where, you know, the chronic listeners will get in there and really put down some good comments. So I'm very interested to hear your feedback. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, there's a whole bunch of stuff up there. Again, over the summer of 2019, I'm going to redo the website so it's got a lot better exposure to information that's on the site. And maybe I'll get the feeds from some of the other social media integrated into the site. But it has audio and video, so you want to switch feeds from podcast to YouTube, be my guest. We have a locked Facebook group with some of the coolest people on planet Earth. I keep the Twitter updated now, pretty much right when these episodes release. I do apologize to the podcast folks. There's a separate process I do to prepare things for podcasts, so I'm usually releasing 2 to 4 at the same time. Hopefully I can get my pipeline streamlined a little bit more, so that's a little easier. There's 2 ways to donate to the page. There's the monthly process of Patreon, and then there's the one-time contribution on PayPal. I will tell you that I am going to go on break once the season's over. And for those of you who've been on for 2 or 3 years, you know this is the process. But when I finish episode 400, I'm going to take a month or two off, probably be closer to 2 months. And I'm going to build up episodes and do a little more research on my end. And we'll make season 5 something special. But it is really, really rough for me to think about doing another 100 episodes, man. You know, I want to go deeper and more existential, but I know I'll start boring people. There's a link to the new season 1 remastered channel. So it's a different channel on YouTube, simply because I don't want to be uploading low number episodes within the normal channel. And especially for those of you who've already seen it, you're just going to get bored of the notifications. So I keep that off in its separate realm. It only has 25 subscribers at this point. I don't think it'll ever be monetized. If it gets monetized, it'll be because the show blows up somehow. Or it'll be in 2 years when somehow we get 4,000 hours of viewing in 12 months with 1,000 subscribers. I think that's what it takes, which is ludicrous. They just don't want to cut a bunch of tiny checks. I think that's the case, and I don't blame them. But they hold it in for a $100 threshold before they pay out anyway, so whatever. But for those of you who contribute during the Patreon or using Patreon, if you guys want to pull out during the summertime because no content's coming, be my guest. I'll take no offense whatsoever. I appreciate every single one of you that part with a dollar to contribute to the show. It really does help. I mean, I buy boxes of these cigars. I do spend money on a lot of the software that I use to build the show. So it does help. So you own part of the show in one way or another. And BitChute right now is working really well. I did notice that I have 2 episodes that I uploaded that didn't encode, so I'm hoping it's not a limit to the size of the video. I don't think it is, but I've got a couple. I've tried to put my Moon one up there, and it didn't process, so those are going to be a little out of order simply because that's the way that they process things. Again, Brighteon is supposed to do a 2.0 in June, which is a month away, so hopefully they get their upload system working because it's not working right now. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.